wives all along and prayed for his betterment. But we all know what it's like struggling with conditioning. In hopes of going home, we try to act as Vaishnavas in Sadhana Bhakti. We receive the effects of who knows how many lifetimes of conditioning, and how it programs us to act in ways against our desire. We want to act as the humble servants and bring pleasure to the Vaishnavas, but the conditioning of anger, envy, lust, pride, delusion, and then Arjuna asks Krishna, what is it that compels a man to act simply against his desire? Because it's lust, and it's anger, born from the contamination of passion. Association of passion and ignorance. So, after Krishna danced on Kaliya's hood, first of all, he was incarcerated, apparently, in its coils for 2 hours, for which every moment was like an endless ordeal, making the whole universe seem void, and unbearable anguish for the Brijavasis. But paradoxically, Balaram was just smiling. And it seemed so contradictory, but they understood by the glance of Balaram that everything must be right. So, actually that glance is a very significant phenomena, because the whole pastime starts with an experience of the potency of Krishna's glance. When the cowherd boys, herding the cows under the burning hot sun, were thirsty, they drank from Jamuna. But why did they drink from Jamuna? Because everybody knew that that area was contaminated by Kaliya's presence in a lake, a subterranean lake beneath the Jamuna, where he had his own mystic city, created by his mystic cities. And the effect of his envy was such that the Jamuna was just boiling with crimson waves topped with foam and fumes that if a bird flying overhead inhaled the fumes, were to speak of the vegetation or the animation anywhere around, it all died. And just a burning sensation surrounding that lake and pervading the area. Why do the cowherd boys go there to drink? And as soon as they did, they all died. And then Krishna just cast his merciful glance upon them, and they all came back to life, and they looked at each other and thought it was just so wonderful what they just done and how Krishna saved them. But Krishna, and they didn't really know, nobody knew the secret. Symptomatically, they could understand that there was something terribly contaminated about that region of Braj, but they didn't know what it was. But Krishna knew. The only tree, the only vegetation at all left alive in the area was one Kadamba tree, because Garuda, in foresight, placed nectar on that tree, and it was in a dormant condition. But in its dormant condition, it had hope. So then when Krishna touched the tree, it burst into bloom, and he climbed up, tightened his belt, he tied back his hair, and he made a fist to proclaim that I will be victorious. And he looked at the cowherd boys with a smile. to assure them everything's going to be all right. And then he jumped in. And when he jumped in, those poisonous boiling waters overflowed just from the little tiny form of Gopal jumping in. And big waves came crashing ashore, and the coward boys all had to run away in fear. And then Krishna dove deep, 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 deep down. And he began splashing around, and with his little lotus hands, he was making the waters overflow, but paradoxically making a very sweet, melodious music, which, upon hearing, Kaliya became infuriated. And then, in no time, everyone came to see that the cause of the disturbance deep down below was this thousand-headed serpent who came rising up out of the depths. Now, this is not just some enchanting tale of a land far away or time long ago. This is something we all experience every day when we try to focus on the whole name. And the mind is rebelling and the ego is retaliating because that holy name is going deep into our hearts, trying to awaken our remembrance of home and our true family and the love for which we're all seeking endlessly and with so much frustration in this material world. But in the depths of that lake, the heart is often likened to a lake where two swans are swimming. There's a serpent. It's called false ego. And the all-attractive name of Krishna, endowed with all his potencies, which is irresistible to this pure soul in a state of grace, is just intolerable to the false ego. Because it's challenging all its misconceptions. And it rises up to challenge Krishna. So, when the cowherd boys got away from the waves, they looked back, and some of the local farmers who were cultivating that region saw this monster serpent rise up with Krishna in his coils. Meanwhile, back in Vrindavan, inauspicious omens, left side of men throbbing, right side of Mataji's, earthquakes, terrible, fierce winds, dark clouds and smoke that covered over the sun like a blanket. And then everyone realized that Balaram had not accompanied Krishna to the forest that morning. And he was in great danger. So the Brijavasis all fled to pursue Krishna's lotus footprints. But Balaram was trying to restrain them and said, there's nothing to worry about. But he couldn't control them. He just... And then when they reached the shore of Kaliyadat, they all just, like uprooted trees, just fell over unconscious, one by one, until Mother Yashoda arrived. And she actually tried to enter into the water. But the gopis restrained her. And they noticed that Balaram was just smiling. And then when Nanda, the cowherd man, also tried to, he had to forcibly restrain them and remind them, remember what Garga Muni said. This child will free you from all dangers and fear. Therefore, and he also said, you must take good care of it. So, I forbid you to enter the waters and forfeit your lives, because then who will raise Krishna? Who will train him and maintain him and sing for him and dance for him? So just stop. And he was smiling. And then the smile of Balaram seemed to reassure the Vrijabhasis that everything was all right. So for 2 hours, being crushed in the mighty coils of Kaliya, totally every moment unbearable for the Vrijabhasis. But in their unconscious state, they were remembering and whispering to each other, reminding them of Krishna's pastimes and that immortal flow of nectar in Krishna Lila, Krishna Katha, which, non-different from Krishna, gives life to the soul, sustain their existence, until Krishna also got disgusted with the serpent, and he told them, I've seen enough of your strength, now you're going to see mine. And then he began to expand, and Kaliya expanded, Krishna expanded, Kaliya expanded, Krishna expanded, Kaliya, and then Krishna became small again, while Kaliya's voice, and he slipped out of his coils and rose up upon his highest of the 101 prominent hoods and began to dance. And that dance was so enchanting and mesmerizing to the Vrijabhasis. As his soft lotus feet, more tender than butter, so delicate that just being touched on Mother Yashoda, those pinkish lotus feet would change color. Those lotus feet, which those tender-hearted gopis were reluctant to place on their softest hearts, was to Kaliya like thunderbolts and crashing the skull. Because yayatam mam prabhajante tam sthitaivam jamiham. Kaliya, personification of false ego, was envious, and he was competing and fighting with Krishna. And he interpreted Krishna's dance as competition. Conflict. And it was unbearably painful. And then, by the touch of his lotus feet, that high and mighty hood came down, down, down. And then another one rose up to try to bite Krishna. Krishna very gracefully rose upon that hood. And out of the 101 major hoods, fortified by the reserve, other hoods were all trying to bite Krishna. He was just gracefully dancing on the highest ones, from one hood to another, to another, to another. Well, in the heavens, the demigods are dancing and singing and trying to follow the rhythm and moods of Krishna's dance with ragas and talas that they were spontaneously composing under the influence of the Vrijabhasis to highlight the occasion. But then Krishna's dance became so creative and so spontaneous they couldn't even follow it. But the splashing and the other, Krishna was making his own music, and the demigods all just began to dance. A flower showered from the sky. And Balaram was reasoning, is it possible to see flowers in the sky? Is it possible for some common water snake to overpower Krishna? And he was also smiling to think that I have a form named Anantashesh, and Krishna never plays with me. And he was smiling because he was happy that this demon serpent is receiving a benediction beyond what he could ever even achieve. And he was happy. This is Vaishnava, happy to see the benefit, the welfare, the upliftment of others. And as in the case of Maharaj Prudha receiving the grace of Lord Gauranga and all the devotees becoming happy, Srila Prabhupada says, this is Vaishnava, and this is all you have to do to go back to Godhead. Just be happy, seeing others being benefited and uplifted. It's a natural condition for the soul, but the false ego wants to see others put down so himself can be raised up, like the hoods of Kaliya rising up. But Krishna rises higher. And by his dancing, bringing them down. So, Krishna created a very inauspicious atmosphere, one of impending death. Death, because two reasons. He wanted to demonstrate the depths of the love in earnest of the Brijavasis to please him under all circumstances. And two, he wanted to dance. So the Lord of Dance brought down the hoods of Kaliya. And as he was dancing on Kaliya's hoods, he was exhaling billows of flames and smokes like an inferno, just toxic with poison. But as the dance went on and on and on, everyone in creation was being more and more enraptured, except for Kaliya, who, when all the flames and all the poisons were extracted from his ego, began to vomit blood, indicating that he was on the verge of giving up his life. And after hours of competing with Krishna, he became so exhausted that as he was on the verge of death, his wives, who all along had just been wishing that he would die, saw in his countenance something they had never detected before. This is something that we sometimes experience when all our competition with Krishna is exhausted and frustrated. We become a little humble. His wives saw that glimmer in his eyes, and they totally changed their whole attitude towards him. And in this world where everyone does all kinds of crazy things to try to get others to love them, what actually attracts the merciful glance of even ordinary people? Not to speak of Vaishnavas, Guru, and Krishna. The natural condition of the pure soul. So seeing that, the Nagapatnis began to pray to Krishna. First of all, they expressed their wonder at how this serpent, and the body of a serpent is awarded to someone who is crooked, envious, duplicitous, with forked tongue, and using that forked tongue to criticize and blaspheme others. That body is testimony of one's wicked mentality in previous lives. And the Nagapatnis were explaining that in what pious activities did he do? Where was his kindness, his austerities, his sadhana? He was conspicuous by his absence. But he had received a blessing unattainable to Brahma, Shiva, and even Lakshmi herself, who all yearn for the touch of the dust of the lotus feet of Krishna upon their heads, but rarely ever achieve it, which has been so readily, lavishly bestowed upon Kaliya. And then when the Nagapatnis finished their prayers, Kaliya, who was hearing all this, but had been too sinful to pray to Krishna, began to paraphrase their prayers. This is how we learn to pray. It's like birds learn to sing in the association of those who already know. Mm-hmm. It's natural. So Kaliya himself began to pray, paraphrasing his wives, that this conditioning in the psyche of a serpent is so incredibly difficult to overcome, but by the touch of your lotus feet, my heart has been changed. And I beg for your mercy. And then, of course, Sanatana Goswami, Brihadbhagavatamrita, gives a slightly expanded version of the story. Not only does Krishna dance in Akadisins, but seeing how the Vrijavasis were so mesmerized, he reached out his hand and personally took all the gopis up under Kaliya's hands, and they had Rasalila, gracefully moving from one hood to another as Kaliya was dancing, and Krishna was dancing, and the gopis were dancing. It was the most unbelievable stage performance, with 101 major stages, all moving, all rising, flowing, and Krishna just gracefully, spontaneously dancing from one stage to another, to another, to another. And then, Krishna took off his chadar and put it in Kaliya's mouth like a bridle, and then took the gopis for a ride around Kaliya's lake. Now you see, in circuses and carnivals, they have rides that look like serpents. They're very terrifying. And why are people so attracted to this? Because we long for Krishna Lila. And any reflection attracts us. So, after the joyride, and everyone returned to shore, and Kaliya he told his wives, get the best of our treasures to offer to Krishna. And they went down into their subterranean palaces and got out the best of their jewels and gems. And they found in their treasure chest something they had never seen before. That amongst all the rubies and diamonds and gems and jewels was a Kastuva gem, which they'd never seen before. They didn't know it was there. What did they do? They offered it to Krishna. That's how he got his Kastuva gem. Although he was the one who put it in there in the first place. What does Rupa Goswami say? We should offer the best of what we have to whatever we're most attached to should be offered to Krishna. But for the conditioned soul, his deepest attachment is his own false ego. It's not a very nice thing to offer to Krishna. But why is Krishna Katha so essential, so important, so potent? It's pleasing to Krishna. It attracts even Krishna. It purifies our hearts. And it brings us back to Krishna. Even though we have nothing to offer, we simply make the gesture. He'll reveal the gem within our hearts. So then he told Kaliya that you can return to Ramanaka Island now, because when Garuda sees the emblem of thy lotus feet upon your hands, he won't try to eat you. We all know the story of Kaliya, how on Ramanaka Island, when an agreement was made, but there's more to it. The serpents on that island used to eat the humans, so there was always a... And then Garuda would come and eat the serpents. So it was not a very peaceful atmosphere. So they all made an agreement, if they just make a sacrifice to Garuda, everything would be peaceful. But Kali was so envious, he stole the sacrifices for himself. And then Garuda was upset that the treaty had been violated, so they got into a fight. And Kaliya was so fearful of Garuda, he knew the only place that Garuda wouldn't come was that tract of Jamuna. Jamuna represents the flow of the bhakti, of the pure soul. When that flow of the rasa in a pure heart is polluted by that Kaliya, the false ego, becomes poisonous. But where did the poison originate? Shobari Muni performing his bhajan in the depths of Jamuna, such an austere soul, and thinking he was doing the fish a favor by cursing Garuda that he couldn't come there, actually did them the most harm by inviting Kalia to come and by his presence destroy and contaminate all life in the area. From that Vaishnava Parada, the focused bhajan of Shobari Muni got disturbed when he saw some fish in the act of reproduction. And he thought that was very attractive. And he came out and went to the king of Mantara and asked him for his daughter's hand in marriage. He had 50 daughters. And the king felt very uneasy. Here's this old yogi from the bottom of Jamuna, all wrinkled, asking for the hand of my beautiful princesses. So he tried to diplomatically handle the situation by saying, they can choose anybody they want. And he looked at him and said, we respect him as a sadhu, but that's as far as it goes. So they got to, I better change my appearance. So they were so attractive that they all started fighting with each other. He had to marry all of them, but his dream did not come true. They continued to fight for the rest of his grihastha days. Not only that, but when he took Vanaprastha, they all followed him to the forest. Not only that, but when he went back to Godhead, they went with him. So you see the effects of Vaishnava Parada. Continue to make your life miserable for a long time in many lives. So we had that strict warning in the story of Kalia. But then, you know, everybody was so exhausted by this whole... So anyway, he told them you can go back to it. And when Garuda sees, I love this footprints upon your heads, he'll be ecstatic. And then there was peace on Ramanaka Island. And the Vrijavasis were so ecstatic that they didn't even want to go. Plus, it was getting late. So they made 5 circles. In the center was the young girls and their mothers. And outside that circle was, you know, the men and their sons. Outside that circle was some cowherds with bows and arrows. Outside of that circle, the 4th circle, was the cows and the calves. Outside of that circle was the most valiant of all the Vrijavasis to guard the whole camp. And everybody was thinking, this is wonderful. Nobody has to go home tonight. We're all able to stay there with Krishna. And toward the end of the night, when they were just so peaceful from talking about Krishna most of the night, and most of the Vrijavasis fell asleep, the gopis were able to have very sweet pastimes with Krishna. Right in the midst of everybody, which never happened before. And then right at the highlight of their enjoyment, surrounding them, as flames reaching to the sky. Like, what is that? Has Kalia come back and surrounded us with his poisonous fury and blazing anger? Or is it, but it's roaring. Is it a herd of maddened elephants charging from all sides? And no, it's an inferno with no way out. So they all turned to Krishna. This is a forest fire. What to do? Let's close your eyes. Because he was thinking that the cows are screaming in fear. The deer are running in terror. The birds are blinded by smoke. The trees are burned to ashes. I don't want anybody to suffer. This is no good. Close your eyes. And in an instant he said, open them. And it was just a pleasing moonlit night in the forest. The instant their eyes were closed, Krishna restored and renewed everything. And it was just like this magician had created this whole illusion, and then with the wave of his hand he dismissed it. Or like a flash of lightning, this whole horror just came and went. And this is a demonstration of how our homecoming will be someday. Mm-hmm. This whole torturous sojourn filled with frustration and anguish. And it feels just like a bad dream. And be relegated to the land of dreams. So, as we were discussing the Mustang, actually, Gopa Kumar, even when he attained Vaikuntha, he was so ecstatic, he kept calling out, "Hey Gopal, hey Krishna," and the Vaikuntha Vasi is saying, "Don't do that! Why can't you just chant the standard Vedic hymns for Krishna's pleasure? Why this spontaneous calling out to like a friend? This is completely making us uncomfortable." So even if I could, that he was completely out of place. Until he returned to the look, he planned to the cows. It is with great intensity that we express in simple, rustic simplicity, that with great earnest the Almighty Lord is seeking out his long lost servants. It's not an ordinary search. It's from the heart. And what a deep, expansive heart he has. That there's some place in it for each and every one of us. And that supreme is an autocrat, which means he does not have to follow any law. Because law would dictate that if he gives much to one, others will be left. But that's not the way with Krishna's love. Otherwise there'd be no hope. So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Sharanagati expresses the hope and the joy of Braj Bhakti. He says, "I'll jump into the Jamuna, even if it's poison. I'll jump on the head of that serpent. I'm not afraid, because Krishna, I am your property, and you'll have to take charge and take care of me." Hearing these narrations increases our confidence. It's such a treasure. It is awaiting us. It's accessible to us. How? When we're polluted by this envious serpent in the dark depths of our hearts. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada said that when you chant the holy names of Krishna, he's dancing upon your tongue. And although the false ego may rant and rave, just keep those lotus feet upon the part of your body which is most like the bosom of the serpent. So eager to spout its venom and poison and put others down to proclaim your own superiority. That's the nature of Kaliya, who is within us all. And this should be a great impetus and a source of hope and encouragement and inspiration to keep those lotus feet. Lotus feet means service. And the best service is to chant, but it must be with quality. to attract the favorable glances of the Vaishnavas, the Guru and Krishna, which restores our life, just like it did to the Catholic Gurus who all died when they knowingly drank the waters of Jamuna, because they had that confidence that Krishna will protect us. He'll make the waters pure. He'll bring back our lives. We'll dance on the hooves of that monster and award him the highest achievement. This is our great hope, as that Kadamba tree had hope being blessed by the nectar from Garuda. And that hope blossomed into beautiful flowers when Krishna climbed into the branches to dive into Jamuna to free the Vrijavasis from the effects of that poison. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
Yeah. I'm a little confused about when Lord Balaram, smiled and showed that everything was okay. Isn't that a little confusing? Because then, in the sense, he's not playing the role of keeping the mood of everyone just seeing Krishna as their friend and the ordinary one of them. That kind of almost is indicating.
No, because Balaram was fully aware that Krishna wanted to cover his Aishwarya nature with this Leela Shakti. And the Leela would be so enchanting that it would predominate over the sense of awe and reverence at the mighty exhibition of Krishna's power.
Explain a little more.
Another way to look at it is that if the Vrijavasis had not received that assurance from Balaram, it would have been too much torment for them. And then the whole scene could not rise to its crescendo for a glorious climax. They couldn't have borne it. They couldn't handle it if Balaram did not give that assurance. That, remember Gargamuni's words? He said, this boy will save us from all kinds of dangers. But still, he must protect him and nourish him and nurture him and raise him and train him and take care of him. So, Krishna's Aishwarya was rising to, higher regions than it had before to facilitate his Leela Shakti reaching unprecedented dimensions. But it would have been very difficult for the Vrijavasis to endure that ordeal for so long if it hadn't been for Balaram's reassuring smile. And the other thing that assured them was that although his offenses are so grievous, Krishna's going to nullify them. Which is another source of hope and encouragement to all of us. And how do we attract that favorable glance? By chanting with sincerity and attention. By serving the Vaishnavas for their pleasure. That attracts the favorable glance of Krishna. And that restores our spiritual life from the morbid condition of material consciousness.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Well, talking about offenses, sometimes we don't want to commit offenses, but still someone may feel offended by something that we've done. What would be the solution?
Well, a couple of things to understand is an action or a thought does not constitute a real offense unless there's some envy inspiring it. If it's just a mistake, a miscalculation, an accident, you bump into somebody, you know, you apologize, you say you're sorry, and you touch their feet off for basis or whatever. And that should be it. But if somebody, you know, feels offended and, you know, you didn't mean any harm, then the Vaishnava response would be that I wasn't sufficiently sensitive. Vaishnava tends to take responsibility even when it's not his and think I wasn't sufficiently sensitive. These things are inevitable in the material world. But how can we possibly achieve such a state of grace that others won't be upset with us even when we're doing our very best? By cultivating such a genuine sense of humility that the grace of Krishna manifests in our hearts and expresses itself in all our feelings and words and thoughts.
And also, like, on the other hand, if somebody seemingly offends you, to not make an assumption that someone meant to do it, but to actually say, express what you're feeling or what happened in a kind way, and then you can clear it, you know, instead of holding on or making something that you're thinking they did, and that way it opens up
another offense.
Yeah, so that way there's always this open communication, and that, you know, it works two ways.
Yes, but being very humble yourself and not, you know, accepting anything as an offense, you'll make it impossible for others to actually take offense by your unintentional whatever.
Okay.
But Srila Prabhupada, you know, demonstrated Vaishnava etiquette at the end of his video, when he intentionally addressed all his godbrothers who were available. He said, please forgive me for my offenses. He said, what you did for Guru Maharaj and Krishna is my offenses. He said, no, but even with the best intentions, some would be disturbed. And he said, well, what are you talking about offenses? He said, well, I was a little temperamental. And I preached heavy sometimes. They called it, you know, Bhagavatam in one hand and what in the other. He said, I'm Mahapatita, most fallen. And he said, I am Mahapatita Pavana, deliverer of the most fallen. So, you know, amongst Vaishnavas, there's, you know, competition to exalt others, and that just, it drives ego right out of the environment. It just leaves no place for it to live.
Mm.
That's why Vaishnava Association, true Vaishnava Association, is so revealing, so purifying, because it attracts Krishna.
So what is, like, real ego? We have false ego, and real ego would be...
I'm servant.
So this ego that is spreading, for example, I think you just said, maybe I misunderstood, you just said that Prabhupada, that his devotional ego spread all over because he was, like, he wanted to preach. Yeah.
Well, he was just taking responsibility for something that wasn't his. to teach Arjuna. But not just to teach, it was a genuine sense of teaching. It was a point of order. Yeah. Anyway, he set that example that, you know, at the end of life, even after doing it all through life, you ask forgiveness, even if you didn't do anything wrong. Because, you know, the soul cannot, it can't resist the influences of a truly humble soul, truly humble heart. I mean, may, you know, a very hard heart may resist for some time, but a truly humble soul will melt the hardest hearts in time. What was it about Kalia? His wives were always praying for his redemption. He had no merit of his own. His wives were Vaishnavas. They were praying for him. So to achieve the favor, the pleasure of the Vaishnavas is our most sure means of redemption and achieving the favor of Krishna.
So that's why Kaliya had the benediction of having Krishna dance on his head, because of the prayer for the one. I have one more question. Oh, do you want to say something?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
When, I forget the name of the muni that you spoke about.
Shambhari Muni.
So, he cursed Garuda from being in that area. He was thinking that he was like benedicting.
Well, Garuda took a fish.
Oh, Garuda took a fish. I see.
And he told him don't do that, but he did it anyway.
I see.
So he cursed him.
I see. So he cursed him.
I mean, it, you know, sadhus, you know, they naturally get attached to the, the fish, or whatever their associates may be. It's natural. But you have to understand, when Garuda takes someone, that's the best thing that could, that's the ultimate aspiration that anyone could aspire for. But
like your fish?
So he missed the point that, you know, that sacrifice is, you know, the ultimate blessing that fish could achieve. So, and also the ego thinking that by my curse I will protect the fish. He missed the point. And that, you know, brought condemnation to fish because it attracted Kaliya. But then, you know, Krishna works things out in time. Because, you know, Shobhari Muni, he was a sincere soul, but like Bharata Maharaj, a very natural thing, you know, feeling affection and compassion for another living entity. But having that usurp the role of Krishna as being the central object of attachment and affection for our hearts. So it's a fine line, you know, we have to have compassion for others. And, you know, sadhus naturally are very sensitive to the feelings and welfare of others. But you have to understand that real welfare is Krishna's desire and Krishna's arrangement. And if you violate that, you're bringing doom upon others, which is what Shivri Muni did. So
that kind of reflect, like, in our world, like, sometimes we see something so we think that we're going to do something to protect something, or we're going to do something to take care of this deer, we're going to fix something, and actually we create more problems by doing
that. Well, the serenity prayer sets the proper boundaries. God grant me the serenity to improve upon the things I can, to relinquish the things I can't, and the wisdom to know the things. Where does that wisdom come from? Why was that wisdom, that discretion lacking in these two cases, Shobhan Muni and Bharat Maharaj? Why were they bereft of this wisdom? What was it in their circumstances that allowed them?
Lack of humility.
Lack of association.
Mm.
They were alone.
Mm. Because they could have asked advice?
Oh. Either asked, or, you know, godmothers, godsisters would say, you know, this affection is undue.
Mm.
It's not the affection is undue, but it was usurping
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
that which is meant for Krishna. It was taking the central role.
Yeah.
Not consequential role. So you have that affection for Krishna, you're going to have it for all living entities. But if, you know, and in association, we keep Krishna in the center, and any deviation will, even if nobody says anything, it'll become evident by how it affects relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you don't get it at that point, somebody will say something. And that's why, you know, solitary bhajan is not recommended. And, you know, you see, even in our line, there are, you know, reclusive sadhus, but they do have association. And there are some reclusive sadhus that just restrict the quantity of their association to enhance the quality of their association. So we don't want to get judgmental towards anyone,
mm-hmm.
but know for ourselves how essential association is. Because that's how Krishna works, to manifest the protective devices and the spiritual
mm-hmm.
parameters, even in our conditioned state, in the southern Bhakti. That, you know, collective voice of the Vaishnavas, even if they're all saying something different, the collective mood of it can be, is one of the ways that Krishna speaks to us. So, if there's some lack of harmony
mm-hmm.
in the Vaishnava circles, then you know, something's wrong.
Krishna wants, when all the devices are quite different from one another.
There's another voice. There's a bunch of them in there.
Yeah.
But the art is to get them all aligned. But the many voices in here, you know, one who is actually the most gentle and soft and sweet,
yeah.
while all the others are clamoring for to be heard.
Yeah.
Yeah, to subdue all them, to pacify them by the nectar that they're really seeking in the wrong way, so that the one who's supposed to be prominent, although he's the most soft-spoken, gentle of all, will, you'll be able to detect the common thread of, you know, all these diverse opinions out here
mm.
resounding in the same thread within here, which is Chaita Guru.
Mm-hmm.
And like a string of a garland, all the flowers are different, but there's a continuous thread.
Mm.
So that thread is, you know, the multifarious manifestations of Guru. Guru within, Guru in the Vaishnavas, Guru in the Acharya, Guru in the, you know, the Shastras, the Sadhus. Find that common thread that's resonating throughout all these different manifestations of Krishna. And it takes practice, and we make mistakes.
Mm.
But mistakes are also teachers. If we let them be. And that's why, you know, forgiveness is so essential, that, you know, condemning ourselves or others for their mistakes, but, you know, encouraging them to learn from them, you know, with forgiveness and humility.
Do a little more
bhajan,
and then we'll have some prasad.
Sounds good.
Sure.